Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 218 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of September 7th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is Puddle of Sweat, Dan Ryan.
I suppose it's better than like Puddle of Mud. Remember them?
I do remember Puddle of Mud.
They had like a good song, like it was catchy. And then
I don't
it was
even remember
like,
it.
Yeah, and I couldn't even like, if you hummed a few bars for me right now, I wouldn't be able to know. But like what's awesome about this and like what we do, Chris, is that I just said Puddle of Mud and instantly one of our listeners was just like, oh, fuck yeah, and like started jamming out to the song in their head, which is awesome. So you're welcome.
Well, dealing with the revelation that, well, Brett Weiss isn't here.
Yes, this is a real weird intro to an interview.
That was totally my fault. I asked him to record on Tuesday, September 5th, which isn't a date.
No, it's not.
tomorrow.
It will be next year.
Yeah, so we're going to have Brett on again sometime soonish. But it was inspired by the fact that Dan works in an actual furnace.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk about our favorite hot places in video games. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, Dan.
Yeah.
How's Guacamelee going?
Well, I finished it, and it was awesome.
Did you finish it last week, or were you just...
No, I was real close to having it finished last week, so...
Gotcha.
Now I'm going back and working on the Platinum trophy for it, because I Platinum very few games, but Guacamelee will always be one of them. But it is fucking hard. Like, So in the first game, if you went and found all the statues, you got the ability, when you turned into the chicken, to fly endlessly, right? You just fly around, do whatever.
The Chuzo statues?
No, these were different statues. I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head, and I didn't do the
research. I really need them to port Guacamelee to Switch so that I can play through the entire thing.
You really do. But this one, the chicken Illuminati, real big in this game. There's a lot more. There's just a lot more chicken in general in Guacamelee too. There's a lot of chicken things going on, and as you go throughout the game, there's an important door in the chicken Illuminati headquarters, and like the grand high muckety muck chicken is talking to you. And he's got these two little guys that are, like, behind him, and they repeat, like, every dramatic thing he says. So, you know, like, he gets to the part where, like, if you find the pieces of the key, you can open the important door. And then they both cluck, like, important door, important door. So you have to, first of all, you have to find these fucking key pieces in this really difficult platforming stuff that you have to do. And then you unlock the door, and you go into more really hard platforming stuff, but you can only do it as the chicken. And while there is a lot more chicken, the chicken does not have all the special moves that Juan has. So it is much, much more difficult.
Like, not a lot of chicken suplexing going on.
No enemies so far. I don't know. I haven't made it all the way through it yet. I might have to chicken suplex somebody. But there's a lot of like, there's like a dash attack that you can do diagonally in the air, like up and down. So there will be sections where there's instant death spikes and then instant death balls that are coming. And you have to like jump and dash and switch between the light and the dark and then flutter down a little bit to hit this little glowing orb that'll let you dash two more times in the air to get up to another platform to do like all this it's just insane. It's insane. And I haven't finished that bit yet. So once I finish that, I can go around and just kind of collect the rest of the stuff. But it was great, man. It was awesome. You know, they didn't really do anything super different from the first Guacamelee. I mean, they added a bunch of stuff to it, and it does feel like a proper sequel, but it is what it is. Guacamelee is a very specific thing with specific powers that help you throughout the platforming and lots of ridiculous references and whatnot. Like, in this game, you go through a bunch of different timelines, right? So what happens is that in the beginning of the game, you're transported to the darkest timeline. Right, so right from jump, there's a reference to Community. As you go... this is indeed the darkest timeline. Anyway, as you're going through...
No, I remember that reference. I was just... You said that, and I was like, Community, that was a good show.
It was. Right. But before you get to the darkest timeline, like, you're sent into two other timelines first, and the first timeline is the Limbo timeline, and it looks like the video game Limbo, like everything's in shadow, and it's like you're walking through, the dude is leading you through it, and he's like, fuck, we better get out of here, and the big spider comes out and attacks right as you leave. And then you get to, like, the bad dude's timeline, and it's like, El Presidente has been captured. Are you a bad enough hombre to get, like... And it's just, it's ridiculous.
That's awesome.
There's another section of it where... Oh, yeah, and spoilers, by the way. I mean, that's the first 30 seconds of the game, but if you haven't finished the game... Been out for 2 weeks, you should have at this point. There's another section of the game where you enter the Fighting Street timeline, and you walk out and you talk to this dude, and he's like, hey man, check out my car, it's a pretty sweet car, right? And like the camera cuts to a close-up of Juan's face just like kind of looking at the car like, oh, I'm gonna smash it. And he's like, yeah, it's saved up all my money to get this car. I'm real proud of it. And then you just like destroy the car, and he's like, oh my God, why would you do this? Why are you like, and it's, but the background, it's the car from Street Fighter 2. It's the background from Street Fighter 2. There's just ridiculous stuff like that. There's one part where you enter the dankest timeline, and they're like, oh man, you're not going to be able to get through here. And it's just meme after meme after meme of like, I mean, going back to like Business Cat and ridiculous stuff as you're going through here, and you get through the end of it, and they're like, it's pretty dank, right? And there's nothing to fight or anything. You just go through and you're looking at memes. It's just it's just insane and charming and wonderful, and it looks great, it plays great. It, God, I love that game. It does not unseat God of War as far as game of the year, but right now it is in a healthy second place. But that's also because I haven't played Spider-Man yet, and all reports indicate
that game is something special.
That it is something special. So I'll hopefully be getting that this weekend, and I might be able to report on that game next week.
But I look forward to hearing your impressions, because I will not be getting it because, well, I'm still almost nowhere in
Horizon.
Horizon, yeah, and I'm working on a couple other things as well. So
tell me about The Messenger.
Okay, it's freaking amazing.
Is it? Because I really want to play it.
Oh boy, The Messenger.
So
it is really, really something special. Real quick, I just want to talk about Minute, because I was impatiently waiting for The Messenger to come out the day before it came out, and I was like, I don't want to jump into any of the other things I'm trying to finish right now, because The Messenger comes out tomorrow,
right?
And so I just want to, I don't know, dick around with something. So I used up my eShop coins that I'd been saved up from a handful of other purchases, and wound up getting this game called Minute that a couple people had suggested I try.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of this game?
Yes,
do you know anything about it?
I do.
All right. That's weird.
Mm. It looked weird.
I think I liked it. It's so the whole thing is like, it just, you only live for 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you have to just keep starting over again and seeing how far you can get in these 60 second intervals. And I couldn't tell if I was really enjoying it or if I was really frustrated by it.
Fair enough.
Or some combination of the two. I do need to go back and finish it, which I thought I might do. But then I started playing The Messenger, and I've been losing sleep playing that game. It's that good. But Minute is neat. So it's like a top-down Zelda-style thing, I guess.
It looked neat.
It is a neat little diversion. I'm glad I only paid a couple of bucks for it. I don't know how much longer the game is, but I put maybe an hour into it, and I was making some progress. It's very clever. It's got a little bit of a sense of humor to it. It's cute and it's cool. So, MINIT, it's on the Switch eShop. Catch it. So anyway, the main event, The Messenger. Oh, all right. So it is very much a love letter to Ninja Gaiden, the classic NES Ninja Gaiden games.
Nothing wrong with that.
Oh, nothing wrong with that at all. I feel like not enough games really pay enough homage to the classic Ninja Gaidens. You know, I feel like the Ninja Gaiden legacy has been a bit tarnished by the modern Ninja Gaiden games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that first one was really good, and then the sequels got progressively worse. And
yeah.
Now, you know, and the Ninja Gaiden just doesn't seem to hold the same weight anymore. But if you think back to the NES trilogy, at least the first two, those games are freaking legendary.
They really are.
They absolutely hold up today as just really some of the best NES games around. So this game pays just really, really great homage to that game, just from a basic standpoint of, you know, you're a ninja, you swing your katana and you hit torches and stuff to get power-ups and whatnot.
Okay.
That's more or less where the similarities end. It's funny as hell.
Really?
This game is absolutely hysterical. The shopkeeper in this game is just my MVP. He is such an awesome character, the shopkeeper. You always go to see him. There's a cabinet in his shop that he tells you not to touch, and if you just keep touching it over and over again, his punishment is to tell you this really long-winded story that you can't skip.
That's kind of awesome.
You keep pressing this, I'm going to tell you a really long story, and I won't let you skip any of the text. You won't even be able to fast-forward the text. You're just going to have to read the whole thing. It's very self-aware. How deep into spoiler territory do you want me to go with this?
I don't know. Not terribly.
All right, I'll keep a lot of the surprises to myself because
it comes out on PS4, right? It will be coming out.
I have absolutely no idea. I don't remember if this is first on. I mean, I would assume
it's just first on Switch.
Yeah,
and
it's
not
probably
for
a timed
very long.
Exclusive.
I don't think.
No idea, but okay. So you run around as this ninja guy. You're in your village and this giant demon attacks, and there's the hero from the west that's supposed to come and save the day, and the hero from the west stops the demon and gives you a scroll and says you have to take it to the top of this mountain. And so you're running around the whole game with this scroll on your back, and it plays like a Ninja Gaiden game where it's, you know, stage by stage, you know, go somewhere, you fight a boss, go somewhere, fight a boss. The bosses are rarely what you think they are.
Okay.
And I mean that in comedic ways. Like, after you finish the bosses, there's almost always a very entertaining conversation to be had afterwards of what just happened, why were we even fighting, or the very, very amusing dialogue. One of the cool things about this game is the abilities that you get are really So a big difference between this and Ninja Gaiden is one of the abilities you get is that anything that you attack while you're in midair gives you another jump in midair.
Okay.
So if you watch videos of it, you can kind of see it looks like you have a double jump, but you really don't have a double jump. You'd have infinite jumps as long as you're attacking things in the air. And the torches, they don't disappear once you've taken the power-ups from them. So you can keep hitting them over and over again to keep jumping in midair. You just don't consistently get items from them after the fire goes out. So there's lots of really challenging platform segments where you have to jump and slash a torch and then use your next jump to keep jumping and jumping over and over again to get from point A to point B. The platforming does get relatively challenging. I'm at a point in the game where some of the things are starting to remind me of Celeste.
Okay.
In a very good way. You'll find these rooms. I'll say that at a certain point, the game opens up to a bit more exploration. And there are these
trinkets. I've seen that bit. That was from like just their release trailer. Was like it goes from like 8-bit to like 16-bit exploration almost.
Yeah, I don't want to go too much into that because that is that was just incredibly cool. The explanation for the 16-bit 8-bit situation is very, very clever.
Mm-hmm.
And how you get to there and what happens after it, because like you'll switch from 8-bit to 16-bit and then you'll get to the conclusion of that. And then things change again.
Really?
in a very, like, it just becomes a very different game after that, and I'm really enjoying it. That's where I am now, is in what I guess would be considered the second half of the game, where I thought the second half of the game was the 16-bit stuff, but no, there's what I thought was I was playing the ending of the game, and then things just go awry, and the people that are there are just like, I guess you should get back out there. I'm completely floored by this game. I really love the music is great. The dialogue again is really great. Like there comes a point when you go back into your original village and you're talking to your old master, and he's like, "Oh, you messenger, you've returned. How's your adventure?" He's like, "Well, it's harder than I thought it'd be, but the music's great."
That's pretty awesome.
The absolutely amazing self-awareness of this game is just nuts. The visuals are great. One thing that I did notice about the switch to 8-bit to 16-bit is that the 8-bit stuff is very much NES.
Mm-hmm.
And the 16-bit stuff is not Super Nintendo. It's totally Genesis.
Really?
Yeah. You can't really tell so much from the visuals, although there is a certain Genesis quality, I think, to the way that it animates.
Okay.
But the music is 100% Sega Genesis.
Really?
It's that very farty, twingy, like, it sounds like a Genesis. And it's beautiful. It's done really well. It's like, you know how people have done crazy things with, you know, 8-bit soundtracks?
Sure.
You're thinking of something like Shovel Knight, where it's like the NES could never make that music come out of it.
Right.
But they're using those instruments. I've never heard anybody take Sega Genesis instruments and try to do stuff like that. And boy, it's really quite successful. Messenger is absolutely, it is God tier. It is making me incredibly happy. One of, I guess, many games that has really, really impressed me this year. I'm having a weird year with games because I haven't played very many big budget games like the big titles that have come out this year. Most of what I've been playing is indie games, and that stuff has been impressing me like beyond belief. I mean, The Messenger isn't hitting me the same way that Celeste did. I still think Celeste is my front runner, but boy, this game is really right behind it in the cleverness department, and just how much fun I'm having with all the different way the game reinvents itself while you're playing it and stuff. It's just wonderful.
I am super excited to play it. It looks like a game that is right up my alley.
It very much is. I mean, it's not only is it just a really great action platformer in the vein of Ninja Gaiden, but it's also the sense of humor is just unbelievable. You have to read everything. You can always, the shopkeeper will always tell you stories. Like every time you go to a new shop, it's the same shopkeeper you're always there at, and they will also explain that. But every time
is able to be everywhere at the same time.
Yes. And it's unbelievable. It's so cool. So every time you can talk to him and you can get him to explain, like, you know, what's going on with the boss, where are you? And then he can just tell you a story, and he'll just tell you some weird fable with some sort of either twisted lesson to be learned or just something weird. They're always funny. I was not expecting this game to be as hilarious as it is.
That's awesome.
The creators of this game, what was it at? Where is that? The big game show that just went by in Germany. I can't remember the name of it now. The creator of Ninja Gaiden and the original composer of Ninja Gaiden went and played The Messenger. Mm-hmm. And they were so impressed with the, I think I had heard somewhere that they had played this game at some point, and they were so impressed with it that the composer actually wrote a song for the game or something like that.
Oh, wow.
I haven't been able to confirm that. I just remembered hearing it somewhere. I can't remember where now. But either way, the music is all very impressive. And the just the fact that they were... I watched a video of the creator of Ninja Gaiden playing it and remarking on how much fun it was, how interested he was in seeing like where the game was going, and that pointing out that this game's very funny. Ninja Gaiden was not.
It has been an excellent, you know, like we talked about at the end of the year last year, that this year was going to be crazy for games, you know, and a wide variety of stuff, you know, Celeste and The Messenger and Owlboy and Guacamelee 2, like these independent games. But then you also had God of War and this Spider-Man game. And fuck, next week, Shadow of the Tomb Raider comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, god damn it. And then in December, Smash Brothers.
Dude, we're like a month away from Mega Man 11.
Mega Man 11, like, there's still stuff coming out this year. It's just, I mean, we are really just, man.
With the exception of God of War and, with the exception of God of War and Spider-Man, it hasn't been a crazy year for, I guess, your traditional blockbusters, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there hasn't been any of those, like, this is that one really big game that everyone's talking about that they're playing that I wished I could have been playing.
Right. Well, I don't know. You give it a little bit of time. The new Paw Patrol game is coming out in October, Chris. So.
Well, yeah.
You got to give it a minute.
Christ.
Well, no, that big game that's coming this year, like the blockbuster game, I think people are looking to Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, that's right. That's this year.
Because that's in October. I don't care.
Yeah, honestly, for me, the big game, like the big budget games are God of War and Smash Brothers. And even Smash Brothers is kind of a different animal because it's a fighting game.
Yeah. But well, yeah, because, I mean, FighterZ came out, Soul Calibur 6 is coming out. Like
It's a good year for fighters, yeah.
Been ridiculous, Chris.
What's that game, Blade Strangers, that just came out?
Something
that's
like
all
that.
The indie characters crossing over, like Cave Story and Binding of Isaac. Speaking of Cave Story, like I was talking about last week, Kiro Blaster was just great. Apparently there's a lot of post-game content that I'm missing on that one. I should go back and futz with it, but there's just so much other stuff to play, you know?
We didn't even talk about, I think it's probably the trailer, I think, dropped while we were recording last week. Capcom's making a new Onimusha?
No, it's Onimusha 1 HD.
Yeah, like it, but it Onimusha's coming back.
Yeah, dude, I messaged Dean about that. He just about crapped his pants. He loves Onimusha.
I'm so excited.
I never played the original Onimusha.
Really?
Never played that one.
Awesome.
I have it.
Of course you do.
Of course I do. I think I might have all four of them. Right? There was four of those ones?
Yes. I didn't play any after the second one. Because there's just
the third
much,
one was the one with Jean Renault.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not play that one. I knew it existed, but I was like, I don't know about this. I mean, I like Jean Renault probably more than the average person, but
that one got into like some crazy time travel stuff.
It's not what
I
wanted. Just give me Samurai Resident Evil. Like that's what I signed up for. But Onimusha's coming back. This Resident Evil 2 remake that's coming. Kingdom Hearts is eventually going to be out, Chris.
Yeah, sure it is.
Next year is going to be just as ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, next year, I mean, oh crap, that's right. Those Pokemon games are coming out. That's going to be big for people. I might even pick up that one.
Well, I'm going to have them in my house. I know that.
Yeah.
The kids have already picked one of each.
I'll probably grab that Pikachu one. My daughter's really into Pikachu, and I think John will get a kick out of it.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
Between Mega Man 11 and Smash Brothers and Monster Boy and Toe Jam and Earl.
Yeah, and Monster Boy and Toe Jam and
I'm screwed. Like, that's one of the reasons I'm kind of happy that I've been... I cannot stop playing Messenger. I just can't. Yeah. I want to play it constantly. And the last game that really did that to me, I think, was Dandara. Mm. Back in February, I think, was when that was.
Yeah.
Before that, it was Celeste. I'm having a hard time even keeping track of the other things I've played this year because there's been that many awesome games that I've played this year.
It's been insane, Chris. And thankfully, listeners out there, somebody has a birthday coming up in October. Pointing fingers at this guy over here. So to start a Kickstarter page for us, Chris, so I can play all of these games that are coming out. Instead of going to work in my furnace. My literal oven that I work in, my 109 degrees. Anyway, speaking
next
of heat, Chris.
Next year's Prime 4, Dan.
Oh, goodness gracious. And the stuff we don't even know. Anyway.
Yeah, and the stuff we don't even know about. Bloodstained, pushed back to next year. God, that was another good one that I played. Undertale comes out in like a week. I got to play Undertale. Bomb Chicken, that was another one that was an obsession. I've been trying to keep track of the games that I've played this year.
It's going to be a good end of the year show. I think it is.
The SAGJ DLDs are going to be really something to
I'm still ridiculously impressed with how you were able to just bang that out, no problem. Because I can never do it. I'm like, the SG... 7, there's a fucking Q in there, there's a smiley face emoji, I'm pretty sure.
Epsilon.
Ellipses.
Oh boy.
Anyway, so...
Oh, real quick, actually, there was one more thing I wanted to talk about. There was a complete effing mystery that came across my desk,
okay.
And I was very, very happy that it got solved. All right, so my son tends to watch... he's weird with food, he has a hard time eating, so one of the ways that we get him to eat better is to... he'll tend to subconsciously eat while he's watching YouTube videos sometimes.
Sure.
So we'll park him in front of a tablet at dinner time, which I hate, but it's, you know, it's either that or he starves. So we get food into him that way.
You know.
He was just poking around YouTube Kids, and this weird video of somebody playing a bootleg Pac-Man game came on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Look, Dad, it's Pac-Man." And I'm like, "Well, that's some bootleg Pac-Man right there." So he's just sitting here watching this video of some dude playing bootleg Pac-Man. And all right, whatever. So I get up and I go out into the kitchen to put my plate away because he's still eating. And the game advances to a stage where there's background music. And I'm like, boy, that background music sounds super familiar, but I can't place it. I swear it sounded like something out of Castlevania.
Okay.
And I was like, I know this song. That's going to drive me crazy. So... I took a video of it with my phone just so that I could like remember what that sound was, because I didn't know how to like find a link to that weird YouTube video from YouTube Kids on his tablet to send to my phone or something. So I took the video of it and I just kept listening to it, and I could not place the song, but I was sure it was Castlevania. I eventually went to Reddit and I posted the video, but I didn't get any responses. But I did get some responses from this VGM podcasts group that I'm on Facebook, and people solved it in like a couple of seconds.
Of course they did.
It's freaking ActRaiser.
Oh, Jesus.
How is there a bootleg Pac-Man game where they put music from ActRaiser in as the background music?
Some weird stuff on that internet, Chris.
I mean, that is just... Who made this? And why did... And it wasn't even just like straight up, this is the Super Nintendo song that we just blared in the background. It's like being created via MIDI or something like that. Like,
that's an odd choice. If
it
you
is so strange.
Know the person who's done that, put them in contact with us so we can interview
them. I want to know how you came up with the idea to make a bootleg Pac-Man game with friggin' ActRaiser of all things. Like, what is... It doesn't fit at all. I mean, it's a great song, but it's like this really like... action-y, I mean, it's the ActRaiser music, and it's blaring in the background of this weird bootleg. Freaking blew my mind.
That's bananas.
It's the ActRaiser Pac-Man crossover we never knew we wanted.
But now we need.
But now we know. Now we need. All right, so, Dan, you made a great segue earlier before I went and ruined it.
You really did. I don't remember what it was now.
You were talking about heat. We were talking about how hot things are.
Right.
And you work in an oven. You work in a building with no air conditioning.
None.
On like the third floor.
The third
right?
floor.
So
109 degrees today.
I don't know if you know this, listeners at home. Heat rises.
It does.
It does.
It gets hotter as you go up.
It really does.
Which is silly. It should go down. Change the laws of physics right now.
Sorry, I just got a message. This is happening live. I just got a message from Matt Flamger. This is a really interesting video on a topic that comes up on Stone Age Gamer podcast quite frequently. Video games won't and can't save its history. Oh, interesting. Something about video game history being preserved. Matt, I promise after the show, I'm going to look at this video.
We're going to get there.
We're going to get there.
So,
anyway.
But because of the heat and just the general heat wave that we are experiencing in the Northeast, Chris decided that it would be a good idea for us to talk about some of our favorite heat or fire or lava-themed levels in video games.
Indeed.
Now, did you include anything from Doom? Because I feel like that's kind of cheating.
I did.
Because it's literally hell.
Yes, that was actually the one. I picked a specific.
Okay.
I picked the very specific hell of Doom 2.
Okay.
Because I feel like Doom 2, when you were in hell... Doom 2 was hell on Earth. I'm trying to remember the actual storyline of the original Doom games, right? The original Doom, you were on
they
Mars.
They had a storyline?
And then you went into... Yeah, you were on Mars, and then a portal opened, and you went into hell, and you blew up the demons, and then I think Doom 2 was where hell like kind of enveloped Earth or something like that. But the thing about the hell in Doom 2 was that it was so disturbing, and it was just a version of hell. When you think of hell, you think of like, you know, rock and sulfur and lava, sure, all over the place. Sure. And in Doom 2, it was just like, well, the walls are made of flesh.
Which is awful.
Some of them have like stretchy faces on them and stuff. It's really, really horrifying. And in the new Doom Eternal, they seem to be modeling the environments after that look, and it's even more disturbing now. But it was it always felt hot and moist.
Yeah.
And it was a really memorable hot thing.
The sound effects, the particular squelching that would happen in those games, I think lent something to the hot and moistness of the overall environment.
And there were also those fire guys, which I know are also in Doom Eternal. The guys that would like run around, they didn't really have heads, but they'd like lift their hands up and they'd create fire on you, and then they'd squeeze their hands together and you'd blow up. And you could, when you made them fight other people, so you could really see their animations from afar. Those were the coolest. God, I love Doom. Anyway, go on.
So, thinking about it, and I think we'll save the one that we probably had in common for the end. Because there is an obvious one, but one of, I think, the best uses of like heat in a level was and this might not be super, I don't know how far you got in Uncharted 3, Chris, but the chateau level in Uncharted 3, when you get to it and you kind of like go through and do the puzzle solving bit in there, the bad guys come in, and basically to get at Drake, they burn the place down, and it's just this giant chateau, this giant fucking house that you're in, and they catch the entire thing on fire, and you have to make your way through the level, platforming and doing all of the like Uncharted stuff that's happening, while like support beams are crashing down and dudes are jumping out from like fiery pits of death, and they're like coming out and like, ah, fuck you, Drake, and like shooting at you and shit as you're running through, and you're like, well, I got to use my cover mechanic while I'm going through here, so I guess I'll hide behind this fire for a minute and just kind of like, all right, I'm hiding behind the fire and like popping out and shooting, and like, and Sully is there too, and he's an old man, and you know, like, you're worried about Sully the whole time, and you know, there's lots of typical Uncharted kind of set pieces where, you know, Drake will run across and jump across the thing. He's like, all right, come on, Sully. And then the floor breaks away and you're like, ah, shit, all right, I got to go around and do a different thing. But like the whole time, place is on fire. And it's just really gorgeous to look at. The fire effect was really, really well done, and the way the environment crumbled as you made your way through it was just kind of this beautiful destruction that was happening and all of this chaos. And it still played so great. Like, just the controls of Uncharted are so much fun to... Sorry, Tiff's looking at me because I'm waxing poetic about this bullshit. But... like, it's just... It just plays so damn well. And it's just so much fun to make your way through it. Just, I love it. I love Uncharted. I don't know if I love Uncharted the way you love Doom, but I do love it.
I also love Uncharted and should really go back and finish Uncharted 3 someday. Because
you didn't play 3 at all, did you?
I played... So here's my problem with 3. It was not only did it come out around the same time as the Prime Trilogy, but it came out after I had my hand surgery.
Oh, yeah, that's
so,
right.
So, like, I got it in the mail, and I couldn't hold the controller.
Which is...
Son of a bitch.
Not ideal.
Yeah. I eventually, like, you know, clawed my way around a PS3 controller for a while to play, like, the first... I don't know, maybe half hour of it, and that's as far as I got, because other things just happened. But I did play through and absolutely adore the first and second Uncharted games. So.
Well, you really should get back to this one, because it's awesome.
You know, after I finish Horizon.
17 other games.
Yes, many, many other things I must do. All right, I'll do one more, and then we'll take a quick break and come back.
Okay.
Just because I've been on a messenger kick, this was actually the first thing that popped into my head when I thought about this idea. I don't remember the name of the stage, because I don't even know if the stage has an official name, but it's like the Catacomb stage in Ninja Gaiden 2, the Dark Sword of Chaos for NES.
Okay.
You have your first, I think, cinematic face-off against Ashtar, and he basically sends you to hell. And it starts off just with the rocks. It's one of those weird things where the music in the background really ties into the visuals in an NES game if it's played properly, which is just one of those things that doesn't happen all that often because it wasn't something that's easy to time. But if you start the stage and you just immediately start running to the right, this the beginning of the music is like this kind of lower bit, and then it just kind of explodes just as this giant flaming background shows up as you walk to the right. And it's a really, really memorable moment because it was just visually stunning back in the NES days to see something like the fire looked incredible and the whole stage is glowing and you got these lava creatures jumping up out of the it's just ridiculous. Ninja Gaiden 2 is such a good game, and this was always been one of the, even though the stage itself doesn't play with actual fire too much, it's always been one of the most memorable fire stages in my brain.
Because that's awesome.
Hot damn. It's good stuff. And it just reminded me of another one that I'm going to write down now.
All right. Let's pretend that you didn't do that.
Okay. Ninja Gaiden 2, Dark Sword of Chaos, Catacomb Stage. What a fantastic fire level. Obviously, there's flaming death pits everywhere. There's this one bit towards the end where you're just jumping on these little teeny tiny one-person deep columns next to each other. And I always loved in Ninja Gaiden, where you can just grab onto the walls, and if you miss a jump, in Ninja Gaiden 2, it was a little bit less dire, because Ninja Gaiden 1, you couldn't climb the walls, you could just stick to them.
Right.
And like Ninja Gaiden 1, you'd miss a jump, and you'd be like, snap. Like, well,
how
do
dead.
I get up from this?
I am stuck all the way here, and like, I'm going to spend 20 minutes trying to like wall jump my way up, and I'm going to get half an inch higher and be like, nah, I'm doing this.
There are some, I got really good at that whole climbing the walls in Ninja Gaiden 1, but there are just some walls that they just don't let you get on top of. But Ninja Gaiden 2, you can actually climb up and down any wall, and that happened to me a lot in that stage. Gosh dang it, that's a good stage. And with that, we're going to take ourselves a quick break. We're going to do some commercials when we come back. We're going to keep talking about a bunch of awesome fire levels because I have a bunch of them listed here and I like them. So you're listening to the Stone Age Gamer Podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com. Geekade and the Stone Age Gamer Podcast are going to AVGC. That's right, A Video Game Con 2018 is just around the corner, and we're going to be there with streaming events, a new Stone Age showdown, and more. Come by our booth outside the Combat Network area for some swag, a chance to compete in the first Waveback chiptune trivia, learn about the Stone Age Gamer Podcast panel where we'll be determining the best Sega mascot character that isn't Sonic the Hedgehog, and much, much more. AVGC will be taking place at the Meadowlands Expo Center in Secaucus, New Jersey on September 15th and 16th. We'll see you there.
Geekade's annual Pain in the Ass-a-thon is back, and this year is going to be our biggest pain in the ass yet. Geekade personalities from the Stone Age Gamer Podcast, Vest and Friends, Mutant Musings, You Shall Not Pass Go, Nonstop Comic Shop, Waveback, and more will be gathering together to play Pain in the Ass video games for 24 straight hours to raise money for the Colorectal Cancer Alliance. With games like Bubsy 2 for Super NES, Silver Surfer for the NES, Mega Man for Game Gear, and Zelda's Adventure for CDI on the docket, there's going to be some serious pain to be had. Watch us suffer through some pain-in-the-ass games for the benefit of asses all over the world. September 22nd and 23rd, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Twitch.tv/Geekade. First up, on an all-new episode of You Shall Not Pass Go, our heroes talk about all things Ravinica, Commander 2018, some artists have a bad day, and Dave does too. Plus, they put some Ravinica in your Ravinica so you can D&D while you Ravinica, for all that means. And they round out things with some talk about the Sheriff of Nottingham and the Gaia Project. Don't miss You Shall Not Pass Go, episode 31. Heard you liked Ravinica?
Next, for your 30th visit to the Nonstop Comic Shop, the boys are bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and ready to talk about Squirrel Girl, Savior of the Letters page, Bane of Craig Ferguson. I don't know what that means. I don't read Squirrel Girl. Mm. Does that make sense to you? You know what? It made sense to Jordan, so
it's
good enough for me. In Unbeatable Squirrel Girl Number 5, Volume 1, a small group of civilians, including Squirrel Girl's college roommate, not Janelle Monae. All right.
I'm black and white. Janelle Monae.
Yeah, I don't okay. get pop culture references.
You don't.
I'm out of touch.
You certainly are.
Have been taken hostage by a vague robot dinosaur-themed supervillain and decide to pass the time by doing the usual tell wildly inaccurate stories about the title character while also parodying multiple eras of comics thing. Plus, they spend some time talking about Marvel Rising, Secret Warriors Initiation. Listen to Jordan and Brendan get nuts in Nonstop Comic Shop Episode 30, Marvel Gear Rising, Revengeance.
Mm. Would you say, Chris, that you're out of touch and that I'm out of time?
I was going for the Doug reference from The State.
Oh, not
He's
that.
Out of touch.
I'm also out of my head when you're not around. Sorry. Anyway, all the notes. Nothing. Okay. Fair. It's an episode. It's a reference for Brian if he's listening. Finally, Jonathan and Patty discuss New Mutants, Dead Souls, and Extermination. So get ready to hear them yell about cliffhangers. Patty calls out the upcoming Dead Man Logan miniseries, as Jonathan calls out one of Patty's friends, which is a joke. So calm down, Karen. That wasn't for your wife. That was for that State Farm commercial or whatever where she buys the tickets with Girly. You know what I'm talking about? No?
Really don't.
Really funny. Could make that end zone my home, Karen. Maybe set up some furniture in there. Oh, it's like StubHub or something like that for tickets. I don't know. Anyway, what kind of sounds do almonds make when they get milked? Oh my God, what a question. What rapper name should Nesno take? Find out on this episode of Mutant Musings. I'm sorry, that one went way off the rails. I apologize, Jonathan and Patty.
You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com. So we're back, and we're going to keep talking about hot stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about Dan.
Oh.
So the one that popped into my head earlier when I was talking about the catacombs in Ninja Gaiden 2, the Dark Sword of Chaos, was the first level of Castlevania Dracula X for Super Nintendo. Now, I am not talking about the first level of Castlevania Rondo of Blood, because while Rondo of Blood is the superior Castlevania game, the first level in Dracula X did something really cool with the fire in the background that Rondo of Blood does not do. There's just this really crazy motion effect going on with the fire. Like, in Rondo of Blood, it's like, it's video game fire happening in the background.
Right.
And in Dracula X, they did this cool, like, wavy effect with, like, it looked very Mode 70.
Yeah.
So cool. Really, 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 really memorable stage. Because, again, I will defend Dracula X to the grave, because I still think it's a really good Castlevania game.
It's really good. It's not as good as Rondo of Blood. That doesn't make it bad.
Exactly. It doesn't make it bad.
We're not talking about Contra, like the C Legacy or whatever. I've already erased that game from my memory.
See the Contra Adventure. So you start Dracula X, and this is kind of Super Castlevania 4 was a long time ago at this point. There's a couple of years between that and this. And oh hey, our panel is from 7 to 8 p.m. Saturday. Mm. Anyway, I do this when I'm sick. I tend to just kind of solve a lot of equations at the same time. anyway, so Dracula X, as soon as you start up the game, it's just there's no like there's a little anime-esque intro or whatever, but as soon as you just press start and start the game, it's just like giant, amazing-looking fire in the background and really impressively animated everything. The first stage in Dracula X is so impressive between the music and all the character animations, and particularly the fire. It's just you're in this giant town that has been completely burning. It's just set ablaze. It's wonderful. Then you get to the boss, and the fire's all, like, blue for some reason.
Because why not?
Looks creepy, and you fight a giant, like, two-headed panther thing. Whatever. It was awesome.
Yeah,
that game's awesome. I love that game. Great fire. Great flamey level. Flameo, Hotman.
It is. Wow. Anyway, I'm going to talk about another game briefly that I know you don't have a ton of experience with, but that is Minecraft, specifically when you get to the Nether.
Nether.
So this was something that, playing with my kids, and they're like, oh, we gotta do this thing, and we gotta get to the Nether, and it's awesome. And, like, what's super cool about it is that, you know, I talked before about not understanding Minecraft, and then coming to an understanding, to a place of peace with Minecraft, and it's a ridiculous game, and I still don't know if it's any good or not, but there's a certain charm and serenity to when you're, you know, chopping down a tree, and I'm gonna build a house and shit, and all that's great, and then you get to the Nether, and it's just dark, and fucking pools of lava everywhere, and there's just, like, crazy dead skeletons and monsters and shit, and you're like, oh my god, this is so not cool. I'm not building a house here. I don't want to stay. I need to leave. It's just such a stark departure from everything else that Minecraft is, that it was just really awesome and jarring and kind of just lent more to this this idea that, notwithstanding, Minecraft is a pretty special, awesome thing. And the Nether was a really cool part of it.
My niece watches Minecraft videos all the time. Like, yeah, I'll come home from work and she's just watching dudes play Minecraft. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's been a lot of folks giving the kids these days crap for the games that they play. And you know what? Let them be happy. You know, people used to give me crap when I was a kid for liking video games at all. And now it's like, you know, everyone likes video games. So
everyone likes video games, but only certain games. I'm still going to make fun of people who play games we don't like.
I'm not crazy about the fact that a lot of kids are playing Fortnite. Because, you know...
I mean...
It's a lot of shooting, but, you know, that's just me. On the other hand, the dancing is legitimately hilarious.
The dancing is legitimately hilarious. But if we can get real for a minute, Chris. If we can sit down and put on our serious pants... Think about the shit we did when we were like 8 and 9 years old playing the video games we played. We played Contra. There's a lot of shooting in Contra. And I know you're not really shooting dudes, and it didn't really look like, but, and here's the thing. It
barely resembled bullets.
but the thing about it is, is that for us, when we were playing it, like, I remember, and God bless my grandfather, who probably thought I was just the biggest dumb shit ever. My grandfather was a soldier in World War II, right? And I would call him in when I was playing video games, and I would be like, Grandpa, look at this. Does it look like the war? Like, this is playing like 1943 and whatnot, you know? And I was like, oh, look, it looks so realistic, right? And he was in the army. Like, he wasn't flying planes and shit. But, like, he, you know, lovingly to however old I was when I was playing, you know, 8, 9 years old, whatever, 10 or whatever, 1942 and 43 came out. He was like, yeah, it looks great, you know? And, like, playing like Choplifter and stuff, and like my dad was a cop, and I'd be like, look at this game, and it's some cop game or whatever, and it's like, is this just like your job? Because to us, that was, it was the most realistic thing we had ever seen, you know, in terms of controlling a video game. Things had not gotten better yet, so, you know, when we played those games, it was real. to us, and we did a lot of shooting and slicing and killing and stuff, and
Yeah, I was playing Doom before I probably should have been, but you know what? It didn't warp me completely. I'm not saying it's all bad.
So kids playing Fortnite, I mean, the thing that I get more concerned about now anyway is the other people that they're playing with.
Yeah.
You know, like, just jump in whenever you get a second, jump into an online match of any given Call of Duty and, just leave the chat on for like 30 seconds. And I mean, if you think we work blue on this show, my goodness.
Yeah.
The things that come out of people's mouths on that, like, that's much worse. So I don't know. Anyway, that was a complete derailment.
Yeah.
Such is life. What makes this show good, Chris?
What the people are
here for.
What was the game you were talking about?
What, 1942 or 43?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I can't even remember the game with the fire that you were talking about before.
Oh,
we went on
Minecraft. Sorry.
Minecraft. There we go. And we're back.
Minecraft. And which does not look realistic at all, but I mean, you know, there is...
It doesn't have to look realistic in order to be impressive. For example.
Very cool level.
A completely non-realistic fire situation. I would be going back to Yoshi's Island for Super Nintendo, one of my all-time favorite games, especially from a visual standpoint. There were these lava monsters in that game that were so impressive. I mean, there's so much visually about Yoshi's Island that's crazy impressive, but there were, I think they're called Nepinut, which I guess the name never really made much sense to me, but there's a blue water guy, but there's also a red lava guy. And it's just this giant googly-eyed face that comes out of the water, but it's all done with that crazy FX chip Mode 7 combo that game was just so uniquely spewing all over the place that just looks incredible.
So uniquely spewing all over the place. What a ringing endorsement. Our game uniquely spews all over the place. Okay.
Well, you know what? It's I don't really know how else to put it, but there was a couple of castle stages earlier in the game that the lava itself looked pretty cool, but there was just this combo of like you'd get these little googly-eyed guys that would pop their heads out of the lava, and then they just spit this stream of lava at you, and like it'd be all kind of adorable, but it's flaming death lava that's just like flying across the stage.
By far the worst kind of lava.
Yes. And then just when the Nepinuts just came up out of the lava, just like, and there's giant open mouthed creatures with the big googly eyes, and they're not really googly eyes, they're really black eyes, but they just kind of float after you. They're not even all that dangerous so much as they are imposing. And they're just super cool, and I love them. It's great fire stuff.
All right, then.
How many more you got? Because I got a lot.
Only a couple more, but I do have one that we have in common here, so I'll jump to it now, and that is Heat Man stage from Mega Man 2.
Yes, indeed.
I adore that stage, even with the really frustrating block puzzle that everybody just skipped with the rush jet. Dude. That game's just awesome.
Dude, hold on.
What?
You were the one that argued that Mega Man 2 is better than Mega Man 3.
I am.
And you just said that you used Rush Jet in Mega Man 2?
No, not Rush Jet. What the fuck is it called?
How very dare you?
Chris, you know, I don't know the names of shit that I love dearly. You know this about me.
Rush is the dog, for crying out loud.
I know.
Item 2.
Whatever.
I'm offended.
I'm still too hot to even think. But thank you for calling me on my bullshit.
Yes, it's item 2, and yes, I absolutely used item 2 to blast past that too.
Yeah, everyone did. I don't even know that I could do the disappearing block puzzle in Mega Man 2. I don't know that I ever have done it. I don't know that I've ever tried, because I was like, but I have a thing, I'll just do the thing.
Oh, I've done it.
And not do, well, of course you have.
It's just out of pure stupidity.
Yes.
The first time I played through that game, I didn't really understand what the items did, and for some reason I got confused and I didn't know what item 2 did, and I didn't even bother trying to use it. So I spent a long time memorizing that segment. I can't do it anymore. I don't remember it at all. But
yeah,
my God, when I spent so long finally mastering getting past that part. And then my sister shows up and it's like, you know, you can just use item two to get past that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh my, come on.
Oh.
It must have been days trying to get past that shit. Days, so I tell you.
It's such a cool level design too, though.
Yes, like it's awesome.
All the fire just going underneath and like those tubes, and it's like, where's that fire going? Are you shipping fire to? It's a ridiculous thing to be doing, Heat Man. And then at the end, like, the Heat Man fight is cool.
Oh, yeah, and Heat Man himself just being a giant Zippo lighter is hysterical to me.
It's a fantastic level.
It really
is.
And
I see you have another Mega Man one on there. But I would argue that this is the best Mega Man Heat level. Was the Dragoon one is another one that's pretty good. Not the one that you have, but... Yeah,
I put down a Flame Mammoth from Mega Man X, and I put this one down specifically because of just how impressed I was with the ability to freeze the stage.
That is very cool.
You know, it's all this lava stuff, and there's power-ups on top of the lava, and I remember going through it the first time, looking at it like, how the hell am I supposed to get any of that stuff? Like, if you touch fire, you're dead.
Yeah, I'm gonna
die. And then if
die.
You beat Chill Penguin stage, all of a sudden all the lava's frozen. And another quick shout out for Junkman stage in Mega Man 7 for a similar situation. If you go back to that stage, which is also an awesome stage with like a lot of, I guess it was like lava because it was supposed to be some sort of junk disposal place, and they were melting things down, which was another really awesome stage design. There's just awesome robot cockroaches running around that stage, which is great. But you go back with the freeze cracker, I think is what it's called, and you can freeze all the lava and walk on it, but there's also these lava waterfalls that if you freeze them and wait a second, they crumble, and then there's things hidden behind them. Magical stuff. Fire stages in Mega Man.
There really are. One that I am surprised, speaking of altering the stage, one that I am surprised is not on your list, Chris, is the Lost City. From Shovel Knight.
You know, here's the thing about me and Shovel Knight.
Bouncy and flamey all at the same time. And I know how you feel about things that are both bouncy and flamey.
It occurred to me that I couldn't remember the stage very well.
Really?
I honestly remember that I loved Shovel Knight profusely, but I can't remember much about the game, honestly. It's been a while since I've played it. And this is kind of by design, because I want to go back and play it again and have it feel fresh.
Sure,
so,
sure.
So I've been very happily kind of forgetting it. I haven't played almost any of the DLC. Like, I haven't touched Spectre Knight's campaign. I played like maybe 5-10 minutes of Plague Knight's campaign. Mm. And when King of Cards comes out, I'm probably going to rebuy the whole thing for Switch.
Isn't that soon, too? Like, real soon, right?
I think it's actually not real soon.
Really? I thought it was.
I think they just recently announced that it's like next year or something, or it's a ways away. King of Cards. When is that coming out?
Well, while you're...
Oh, April 2019. There it is.
Oh, well, that's soon. No, it's not.
That's...
it's really not. So...
But yeah, I thought about looking up a video of this, and I just didn't.
What made The Lost City so cool was that's the one where you jump down and you bounce off the giant beetle, right? So the giant beetle is walking across the lava.
Oh, yeah.
And then as you go throughout, you come to realize as you go throughout the stage that there's the green gloopy shit that you can knock onto the flames and then... make your way through and bounce over the lava, so like it teaches you to play throughout. It was just a very cool stage and a cool boss fight, like with the mole looking dude.
Yeah, I loved Shovel Knight very much. I was very proud to have backed it, and then I played through it. I mean, I just haven't played it since it first came out, which I guess was
through it and
quite a while
again. Probably forgot it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the map and I remember the first stage very well. And I remember, all the stages catching Shield Knight and the dreams and the campsites.
Right.
And there's like a bunch of stuff I remember about it. And I'm sure that when I go through it, it's going to be, I'm going to really remember it as I'm playing through it. But there's two of those situations that that kind of hit me today. It was one that I was like, I know there's a cool Shovel Knight stage, but I don't remember it. And I know there's a really awesome fire stage in Star Fox 64, but I just can't remember it. So I didn't really want
right. to
fake a bunch of memories about it. And I just thought of all these other ones that I wanted to, that I remember more fondly, I guess.
Right. So. The show has journalistic integrity, Chris.
Sure it does.
Right? I mean, that's what we have.
We have lots of things, Dan.
That we do. What else you got on your list?
I loved the lava cave levels in the original Wizards and Warriors. The lava level in Iron Sword, where you had to fight the fire elemental, was super cool. But
yes.
there is something very memorable about getting the boots of lava walk, I think is what they were called.
Which is a bit on the nose.
A bit on the nose. And then
as
you just
far
get
as the name is concerned.
So if you've never played the original Wizards and Warriors, they were just these catacombs and just all this flamey lava at the bottom of the stage. And if you got the boots of Lava Walk, you could just walk on them. But the little flames would shoot out the side of your feet because like you're standing on lava. But you could also climb on these like flaming pillars that would just shoot across the stage and you could stand on it and just go up and down. It's really memorable. Very, very cool stuff.
You know, like you do.
Like you do. Wizards and Warriors is a ridiculous game, and I absolutely love it.
Really is just a goofy-ass game. Just a silly, silly game. I do care for it quite a bit, too, though. It's damn good. I would like to see... Well, we've talked about Wizards and Warriors a bunch.
Yeah.
So, the last one that I have here before the obvious Metroid and Zelda ones... was specifically the Genesis Cave of Wonders escape.
Oh, yeah, from Aladdin. That's a good one.
Because
the
all
Super
of a
Nintendo
sudden,
one was good, too, but the Genesis one was a little more visual.
It just doesn't look
impressive.
As good.
Yeah.
You know, it just... There's just something about that Genesis one that just looks so damn pretty. It's just so, so nice to look at. But that one in particular... was really fun. Like it was challenging and it was hard, but it never felt super unfair like a lot of games of that time, you know, like where there was just really, really hard, unfair stuff that you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, just like in Aladdin, Abu touches the forbidden treasure and then the Cave of Wonders starts to melt. And you have to make your way in platforming sections and then a magic carpet ride at the end, and it's just awesome.
I would have to heartily agree with that. That was one of those games that I never spent much time with because, you know, I didn't have a Genesis back then. I was a hardcore
right.
Genesis hater.
That's right.
But it was one of those things that I secretly was like, wow, this game looks incredible. I never really enjoyed playing it that much. I remember I played it at a friend's house, and I remember seeing him play it first and being like, wow, this looks incredible. And then actually playing it didn't feel very good. And I think that's kind of the disparity. And I think that's part of the argument where some people prefer the Super Nintendo one to the Genesis one.
Sure.
Because I do think I remember getting the Super Nintendo one for Christmas and being immediately just completely put off by the graphics. Because I turned on that game and was like, this does not look like the Genesis game at all.
No.
But it's really fun. Really, you know, it's a Capcom really platformer. Fun. It's tight. It controls well. So it's not as visually impressive as the Genesis one, but it does have its own... benefits there. But yeah, the Cave of Wonders and the Genesis one is just really, really impressive looking.
Yeah, super cool stuff. All right, let's rapid fire these and then get to the big one.
All right, Hothead Bop from Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Conquest. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really awesome lava stage. First off, the music is incredible. Look up Hothead Bop by David Wise. It is ridiculously awesome track. Donkey Kong Country 2 has an amazing soundtrack. But what was so cool about this stage, at least I think this is the right stage. I can't remember if this is the name of the stage that has the balloons in it, but there's these, so you're in this lava cave that just looks great because the visuals in Donkey Kong Country 2 were all that awesome, like pre-rendered stuff. And when it came to stuff like lava, that was immediately impressive to begin with.
Right.
That's some of the stuff in Donkey Kong Country that really still holds up today, is those stages still just look incredible. But there are these awesome bits of the lava stages where there are these hot air balloons just kind of floating around because the lava would create these geysers, these heat geysers. And so you'd have to like you'd get on the hot air balloon and you could control it back and forth, left and right. And you have to keep going from like heat jet to heat jet. These little, you know, bits of hot air to kind of keep yourself afloat while you're trying to get from point A to point B. Super clever. Super clever stage
design. Super
clever level. Just really awesome stage design and a very, very memorable stage. Partly, again, because of the music. The music was just, has this very, very... The music actually has lava bubbling in the background. It's like part of the track. So there's just this this constant feeling of heat the entire time you're playing it.
Which is awesome.
It is awesome. I love Donkey Kong Country 2. 3, not so much. 1 and 2,
I do not remember that stage at all. And I know I've played it, but I do not remember it at all.
It was also had the most adorable video game spider, Squidder the Spider, that had sneakers on all of his feet.
Of course he did.
Of course he did. Another memorable one, What the Heck, from Earthworm Jim, where you're in hell. And the stage itself is just kind of goofy, and it does fire pretty well. It looks like your very traditional version of hell. Evil the Cat is dancing in the background. But what always cracked me up about this was that the music was, you know, what you would expect, this classical... God, I can't remember the name of the song. The dun, 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 dun. It's just
right,
you know, traditional evil sounding music, and then it switches over to elevator music.
The isn't it the something on Bald Mountain or something like that? The one that they Chernabog from Fantasia is.
Yes, I think so. So yeah, they switch over to elevator
tip-toe
music.
Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
There you go. When they switch over to elevator music, that's when you start hearing all the people screaming.
Because it's elevator music.
Because it's elevator music, and that's the true torture of hell, is that...
Because they're in hell.
Not because they're in hell, and there's lawyers running around popping their briefcases open at you. It was a very funny stage, very memorable
Earthworm
stage.
Earthworm Jim was fucking great.
It was. I liked Earthworm Jim 2 a lot as well. Everything past that, though.
Yeah.
Not that there was much past that. There was that weird Game Boy Color one that's just hideous and broken, and I've never even played Earthworm Jim 3D because it just looked bad.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
I have to absolutely have to shout out Rocket Knight Adventures, the first stage. You know, it's this assault on a castle, and you're trying to, you know, get through the castle and stop the evil pig guys from burning it down or whatever, and there's just this one part of it where the fire just starts shooting across the right side of the screen towards the left. It's like an auto scrolling segment, and like you'll just be walking, and then all of a sudden the heat just kind of distorts the entire screen, and these like instant death flames shoot across the screen. It's super cool. Love that stage. Love that game.
It's a damn good game.
My buddy Jonathan from Mutant Musings, he brought up the a good one when I was talking to him earlier, is the deserts in Earthbound. Have you ever played Earthbound?
No.
So there's these desert bits where you're walking through the desert and you have to bring wet towels and stuff with you, or you'll die of heat stroke. I died a couple of times in the desert when I didn't have enough water and or towels with me to get from point A to point B. The desert was it was definitely a memorable segment. It's not something that I look back on uber fondly,
right,
from Earthbound, but it was one of those things that never really bothered me because it's like, all right, I know what I have to do and I'm going to do it. You got to get through the desert, and it just felt so hot. It didn't give you any like crazy visual effects or anything to go with it. It was just between the sound and occasionally just watching your characters get heat stroke and start losing health.
Like, between the sound and the sudden death, it was.
Yeah. It just felt hot. Death Mountain in Breath of the Wild, another really memorable hot area because you had to like put on the ridiculous armor or whatever to keep yourself cool enough, and then go visit the Gorons who live on Death Mountain and are not affected by the heat, and they're just sitting in these hot springs and stuff. And I went on about how much I love Breath of the Wild.
Have you? I wasn't listening.
Yeah.
Well, I missed it.
You were too busy talking about how much you loved Horizon.
That's true.
That was a really memorable thing. But if I had to pick any one super memorable thing from The Zelda franchise. It was that first fire dungeon in Wind Waker, which is my favorite game of all time. That fire dungeon was so incredibly cool. Again, because of just the way the game made you feel the heat, which just felt so real, but also just how incredible it looked when that the big fire pillar shot up in that stage. And it's still one of those effects that just really holds up, like, wow, that looks awesome.
Wow, that looks awesome. And how were they able to do that and do it so well?
It really just goes to, even on the GameCube, you're not even playing the HD version. You go back to the GameCube one, it still looks great. And it's just a tribute to that. Not a tribute. What's the word I'm looking for? Whatever. It goes to show how awesome that I am tired and sick and I can't think of big words, but it goes to show how great that art direction was, that it still holds up today. Like it's absolutely timeless. And boy, that dungeon was so cool. And you eventually fought the boss in that stage, the giant nasty looking crab scorpion looking thing, which I'm sure has a name that I'm just not thinking of right now.
Kevin.
It's the fire effects all around that thing. And when you finally beat him and he just gets all dry and just falls apart. God, I love that game. They really need to put Wind Waker HD on Switch because I want to be able to play that game everywhere I go.
They do. I might actually play the HD one if they do. I mean, I say I might. I won't, but not because I don't want to.
Not because you don't want to. One of the few, like, really, that's one of the games that really used the Wii U gamepad in a way that made me happy. And not in the way that most people really liked it, because the inventory system you could do with the touch screen, which I didn't care for at all.
Right.
But when you're out sailing, which I love and most people hated, I could just prop up the gamepad and have my map on the whole time. So just like lay back on the couch, and my son was like a baby when this came out. So he'd just like sleep on my chest and I'd play Wind Waker and have my map out and my good times. I love Wind Waker so much.
What are you doing? I'm just sailing.
Just sailing, charting the ocean, square by square. God, I love that game. So, Dan, the one that we both thought of.
Right. Metroid.
Super Metroid.
Super Metroid in particular. The first time you get to Norfair is...
Oh, boy.
Just stunning.
It is. It's amazing, especially if you were coming off of being a fan of the NES Metroid as well.
Because what is in the NES Metroid is cool, but
you remember what those creatures look like, you know? I remember getting to Norfair and hearing the music and being like, wow, this place looks
this
creepy.
Looks really cool and really and little... it looks like what Metroid did so well, especially with like the Norfair area when you got there in Super Metroid, was that felt like without it like level 3. You know, it felt like you had gone to the next step and the shit that was there was going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Like, you're not ready for this. You're not.
I remember getting into that place and seeing those little fire monsters walking around, the little guys that they look like the, I think they're called Gemurs in Brinstar, but they're just all on fire, and looking at them like, I remember those from Metroid. They look so cool now. But as awesome as that was, nothing had prepared me for when you go through a door and you see the background distorted with heat and you just start hemorrhaging health.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, crap. I got to get out of here because it is too hot for me to live. And it was one of those things that was really cool that they did with, you know, in the original Metroid, the Varia suit basically just, you know, you took less damage. But in Super Metroid, they gave it this heat utility. Which continued on going forward in the franchise, including the wonderful bit from Other M where she won't turn on her various suit and would rather burn to death than disobey an order from... God, Other M. Game is so good and so bad. So bad.
So bad.
But
yeah, like this, the hemorrhaging of health right away was just so like, oh, fuck, shit, all right, I gotta get out.
Like, and just immediately turn around and be like, wow.
Not ready.
Wow.
Not ready.
All right.
And that is just not something that happens anymore. You know?
Now, here's a question for you.
Maybe I'm wrong, but that instant
Did you ever try to just go for it?
Yes, of course.
Me too.
Of course. Never made it.
I did it again in Ridley's Lair, right before you get to Ridley's Lair.
Right.
Where it was just like the super, because there was lava that you could like survive, and then there was the super hot lava that there was just you, not even your various suit would protect you from that shit.
There was the lava and the not fucking around lava.
Yeah, there's like, this lava's hot, but this lava will murder you. And I remember trying to make it through there all the way to try to get to Ridley's Lair, and I just ran out of health.
Like, well, because there were those sections in that game where you were like, all right, I'm kind of stuck. I don't know what to do. Maybe I'm supposed to just run through here?
Exactly.
That might be a game design choice they made. Yeah. I don't know, so I'm going to try it. And like, you might get a little bit quicker. Like, all right, well, if I jump here or if I do this a little differently, maybe I'll get a little bit, like, closer, like, yeah, of course.
But as for all the awesomeness that stuff is, the coolest thing to my mind that's in Norfair is the Krakemeyer battle, which is still one of my favorite boss fights I've ever seen, because I was just not prepared for that level of awesome.
No.
You just drop into this room, and there's this kind of cute-looking monster just sitting there stomping on the floor, and you keep shooting him in the mouth, and you're not really doing him any damage, but he's backing up every time you hit him, and eventually you see the lava pool behind him as he just keeps shooting him until he falls into the lava,
and he just... Then...
I was not expecting the gruesomeness of him just screaming, trying to get out of the lava, and the skin starts melting off of his face. It was like, oh, God, what did I do?
Yeah, that was some fucked up, repugnant shit.
Oh, my God. And then he sinks into the lava, and you start to see little bubbles trace across the ground, so you follow him. And then the screens, you hit this wall of spikes, and it knocks down the wall of spikes, just this giant Krakemeyer skeleton. And you're just like, I got to fight its skeleton now. It's going to kill me. And then the skeleton just crumbles in front of you. And it's like,
so cool.
Wow. Just wow. That whole, God, Super Metroid is one of the best games ever made.
It
Boom.
Really, really is. And like the level of pacing that they were able to put into that, like, and the just genuine, honest to goodness fear playing that game of, I am just not ready for this.
Yeah, it got isolation right. It's one of the most perfect games ever made.
It really is. And I would say, I would argue the best fire level that we could possibly talk about.
I couldn't agree more. It is pretty much it's pretty much it for me. I mean, even just that whole bit where you run right into the hot room was one of the most memorable things. Just getting to Norfair and being like, this is not gated off by some random bullshit. Like, it's not like there's this wall that I can't blow up because I don't have the super ultra missiles. It's just, you can't get through here because it's too friggin' hot.
Right. I mean, I could be here, but I shouldn't be. Yeah, awesome, awesome stuff.
Well, that's our show. We're going to end it on that, because it's not going to get any better than that.
That's right. We somehow turned this into a topic, Chris.
Way to go. Go us.
Damn it, we're good.
Join us next week when Dan and I will be doing a rundown of the games featured at this year's Pain in the Assathon. The titles that will make our players weep in the name of charity will be detailed one by one, and Dan and I will give our predictions on who we think will succeed and who we think will break under the pressure. It's going to be us.
It's going to be us. Big time.
Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, where can the good people find you?
At Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That's it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.
Puzzle and Dragons. Ah, you thought I was going to go a whole episode without mentioning it.